Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is a show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send us a recipe or a question, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, they are archived on that website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to be talking about being productive. And I suppose we kind of talk about being productive each show because we talk about getting someplace and what to do and how to reach a successful outcome. But let's think about being productive specifically this time. Yes. Mm-hmm. Oh, I see we have lots of people. Hello, everyone. Yes. Uh-huh. And yes, I know you know exactly what I'm going to ask because we do it each time. This is an unscripted show, and I usually ask a general question to find out what we'd like to talk about. And our general question will be today, how shall we define being productive within our context? Within the context of dispute resolution, a mediation, a negotiation, even a workshop and a seminar, how shall we define being productive and how shall we get there, really, with what we're going to talk about today? Yes, uh-huh. I think the most popular answer that we're getting is that we should define being productive by reaching a successful outcome. Yeah, by reaching our goal, by getting our successful outcome. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are talking, I'm going to call it accomplishing consensus, on how to move forward to the next steps. Right. We have a successful outcome. We reach consensus on what we're going to do next so that we can get to that successful outcome. Yes, how about agreeing on a plan to move forward? Not only agreeing that we should, but agreeing that, well, we need a plan. How should we do this, right? Yeah. You know, this is a good point, too, since we talked about having a plan. A lot of folk are talking about understanding that the plan is flexible. And as we get into it, as we decide what we're going to do and how we're going to do it, and we experience the real world, sometimes our plans need to be flexible. Yeah. And you have to explain that to people because they don't understand it. They think, well, there's a plan in place. Well, yeah, but sometimes life changes. Circumstances change. A lot of people are talking about the media. And media promotion and acceptance of an agenda goes to being towards being productive, right? Yeah. Some folk are talking about productivity in the actual process, as in efficiency in the process, which cannot be overstated. Sometimes we kind of gloss it over because we're thinking about what to do and how we should react and like that. But having an efficient process in place is fabulous. You really need it. Yes. And pretty much everybody's talking about the civility rules and how they will impact how productive we are. Because if we let the civility rules lapse, not going to be a good thing. Yes. So let's get right started and start talking about all these fabulous ideas. How about a successful outcome as the product of being productive, right? Yeah. Yes, thank you. Quite a few folk and Daniel and others are saying that the first thing you need to do is you need to define what your successful outcome looks like. And people forget that step. We have to know where we're headed and what success looks like so that when we get there, we know we've gotten there and we know how to find it, right? We can't work towards something that we haven't defined what it should look like, or at least outlined it. And we know that we're going to be flexible, and sometimes circumstances change, or we didn't realize some of the complexities that happens. But we need to define what our successful outcome looks like so we know what our goal is, right? Even if it shifts, even if it's too early maybe for the big goal, and we need to take it more step by step. But let's define it and let's find out what it looks like so we know when we've got it. Yeah, what an idea. Mm-hmm, yeah. Yes, Muhammad says you need to be flexible and take it step by step. Yes, sometimes our successful outcome is the outcome to the first one or two steps that needs to be done before we can reach the ultimate goal. And that is a successful outcome. We've got that under a belt. Let's move forward, right? Yes, Muhammad says you need to be flexible. You need to understand that your dreamed of goal may take some steps in between. It's not that we're not going to make it, and it's not that we're not going to have the ultimate successful outcome, but we may have to work a little more, a little longer, a little harder, a little more piecemeal than we thought we might, and not jump over all the steps and go, woo, yes, there's the golden egg. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. You know, quite a few people are talking about a mission statement. Now, I don't object to a mission statement, as you all know, but I think that's something that you should do if your group needs it. It's a leadership judgment call. Yes, it helps productivity to know where you're going. You got it. There's no out to that. You have to know what success looks like. And if actually making a mission statement will help define that for the group, I'm all in favor of it. I just don't automatically do it because it is kind of time-consuming. You get to kind of arguing about the picayune wording of it because if it's too general, then what good is it? And if you get too specific and you argue about the wording of things, it might be beneficial to work it out. I'm not saying it's not, because a lot of you like that. You think it's the first negotiation and the first consensus building. Yeah? If that is true in your leadership judgment, go for it. I don't automatically make a mission statement. It depends on the group, how close they are to each other, and in opinions and in what needs to be done. It depends on whether or not we need to show it to somebody. Sometimes you have a grant or some sort of paperwork or some sort of a media thing, whatever, and you need to show the mission statement to someone to make clear what you're doing. Hey, that's okay too. Yeah, this is an interesting point. A lot of you have seen me in person, and thank you, yes. And I suppose I do kind of say a mission statement, and it's also on the business card, right? When you ask me, what does Recipe for Peace Now do? When people ask me that, I say we positively change lives one conversation at a time by teaching mediation, negotiation, and civil discourse skills around the world. That's kind of a mission statement, isn't it? Because it says what we do, right? Yeah. So you might indeed, if you are making a group that's going to be in existence for a while, and maybe have many, many ideas and many good things to do in the world. Yeah, you might actually think about a mission statement that you tell people when they say, what do you do? Mm-hmm. Because I hear people say things. You ever hear people say, what do you do? And they say, I'm a consultant. Ah, gee, you haven't answered my question by a mile. What do you consult for? Who do you consult for? What kind of consultant? What does consultant mean, for God's sake? Yeah, and so I suppose that's true. And I actually use the mission statement as an explanation of what we do. So, but that doesn't, it's not a mission statement for a specific goal, now is it? No, it's an explanation of what we do, but it's not specific to a goal. Yeah. And so a mission statement would be for the group, in this context for productivity, would be much more specific to whatever it is you want to accomplish, right? Yeah. It takes some time, it takes some negotiation. If in your leadership opinion, you've got the time and it would be good to have that negotiation and kind of get it out and get it done and like that. But that's a leadership call. It really is. Yeah. That's a leadership call. But yeah, I'm not against it. People are talking about timelines also. Yeah. Ellen and others are talking about creating a timeline. I think timelines are most productive if you've got actual deadlines that must be met. Maybe created by an employer, right? Which might be a more flexible deadline. The most inflexible deadlines are like filing deadlines. You have to get something in by a certain time or you can't get on the ballot, for example. Yeah, governmental, administrative, organizational type deadlines. Yeah. And yes, sometimes there's a deadline as in by the annual meeting, right? Whenever that is, because it needs to be discussed at that. So it all has to be put together and finalized. Yeah. I don't believe in creating a mission statement or a timeline just because. I think there should be a real reason for doing so. Although some of you like, okay, some of you like it as an administrative act to begin with because it gets us all talking to each other. All righty. And it makes everybody feel that they're moving forward. All right. Okay. I suppose it depends on the kinds of groups you generally do and on your own leadership style. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, it's perfectly valid. And I've seen it done quite effectively. The next topic is going to be reaching consensus as a productivity skill. Padma and others are talking about when you've got a bunch of diverse people in the room who want to reach the same goal, right? Successful outcome is the same, but they all want it for different reasons. Yeah. And they have to understand that they should need to reach consensus and work as a team, even though they might not have the same reason for wanting the goal. They need to work as a team because it's a good goal and we need to go forward with it. And we all agree on that part. Yeah. Yes. When people ask, for example, the simplest example I recently know of is in the United States, marijuana is illegal federally. There were organizations, all kinds of organizations, who wanted at least medical marijuana to be legalized in the federal government. They actually worked separately for many years and tried talking to Congress people and like that. It was complicated. The long story short is that it became apparent, and it has really nothing to do with this administration, which is a little eccentric. It became apparent, yeah, people are laughing. It became apparent that federal level legalization was not coming anytime soon. You had all kinds of different organizations, all kinds of different leaders, all kinds of reasons for wanting legalized medical marijuana, which was the first step. And these groups had been working separately. In order to think outside the box, and get a ballot measure to be voted on by the citizenry in each state. A lot of you are not in the United States. You understand the federal government overrides everything, but state government gets voted on by the people directly, right? And city government and like that too. We have a lot of elections, a lot of people asking for stuff. It was in order to get it on the state ballot, which was highly, highly unusual because federal Trump state, but nobody had ever thought about putting it into a specific rule, a law, that you couldn't put something that was federally illegal on the state ballot. Ha! In order to do that, the organizations had to get together and make a plan and really push for it and really raise some money for awareness and get signatures to get it on the ballot. You don't just get something on the ballot. You have to actually have a tremendous amount of citizen signatures of the really valid, I've shown you my driver's license and you've put down the number type, right? Right, which means that the citizenry really have to be interested. Mm-hmm. In order to do this, all of the various groups had to work together, which means that you had all kinds of power bases that people didn't want to lose. You had all kinds of reasons to be in the group that's pushing and like that. But the goal was legalization. The goal was definite, right? And so when you have a definite goal, they all had to come together and put aside their differences for the common goal, right? You had economic interests, growers, retailers, marketing people, lawyers who wanted, and accountants and stuff who wanted to be the ones that formed the corporations and things, right? Yeah. You had different kinds of groups who wanted to use the product, different diseases. You had everything from HIV to old age to macular degeneration, right? Yeah. All of these things, very diverse people, too. And each of them with their own group, their own power base that they didn't want diluted, right? And they had to be made to understand that no matter what their differences were, their actual goal was so the same and so necessary to all of them that they needed to work together, right? And pool resources of people and money and ideas and like that. Yeah. So sometimes it is true that you are reaching consensus even though everybody has a different reason. No difference as long as we're all working for the same goal. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a good point too. Raylan says that people who are good-hearted and like-minded can disagree. You need to remember to work as a team. Yeah, people can be good-hearted and like-minded and plain and ordinary just disagree. They need to work as a team. They need to understand that this is a team. A team has been made, right? That we need to work together because it's important. And we are indeed getting it together, we are indeed going to be able to work together to work towards our common goal because we are a team. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes people are indeed very good-hearted, but they have different ideas of how to get there. I see that a lot in organizations I belong to. I belong to an organization called Rotary, that most of you are familiar with. Yeah, I know a lot of you actually are Rotarians in all sorts of different countries and areas of the United States. It is very big, and it is basically, for lack of a better term, kind of a do-gooder organization, right? We get together. Our motto is service above self. We are all volunteers, and we get together, and we do nice things for the world. Yeah. We are like-minded in the fact that we see a problem and we go to solve it. In fact, polio was a problem that Rotary has nearly solved. There were only like 9 cases of polio this year in all the world because we've gone all over and given the vaccine, right? Yeah, and eradicating polio from the face of the earth is a biggie. Now, when it started out, it was hard to know how to do it. Now we've got it kind of down to a plan, and governments have put in some funding and like that. But as you can see, that's a hell of a big goal. We all agreed on the goal. It wasn't lack of agreement. All good-hearted people, meaning well. But how to reach that goal, in each of the countries, no less, was a matter for consensus building, right? Yeah, because we had to agree that this is how it should be done. This is the most effective way, right? Yeah. Yes, and along the way, we needed to have kind of innovations. Mm-hmm. Yes, we needed to actually have an innovation in the medication. You know that in order to inoculate against polio, it's a drop on the tongue for a child, right? But we go into some very inhospitable climates, right? Very, very hot often. Sometimes very, very cold, but mainly very, very hot. And the vaccine wasn't lasting very well, and we weren't certain, because there's no refrigeration or anything, and we weren't certain how it was lasting, even if it was doing okay. So the manufacturers had to be connected with and convinced to do something relatively expensive that cuts into profits. Ooh, they hate that. I suppose they raised the price, but that's beside the point. They had to make packaging that told you if the material, is the vaccine, had been overexposed and gone bad. Yeah, it's temperature indicator on the packaging is what it is. Yes, so that we know if we've got people coming for it, that the vaccine is, for heaven's sakes, good and not gone bad in some way. Yeah. So that's something that we really need to get consensus on and really work together on, right? And then we have to work with other types of countries and leaders and power plays and like that. And it seems like a no-brainer. We don't like polio. I mean, polio is nothing to like, right? And we're going to get somebody is going to come with vaccine to stop it. But not all governments, not all leaders were initially on board because they worried about their own power base and they didn't care if people got polio, basically speaking. It was like, I'm not going to get polio because I'm rich and I've had the vaccine. I don't care about the poor. Ah, gee. And so that took consensus building and negotiation. Mm-hmm. And we had some consensus building amongst ourselves as how to approach that, right? Yeah. We don't always agree, but we do get together in the final and go as one voice with the decision. Mm-hmm. Yes, Brody and others are talking about the 5W questions, which create empathy and team building to go forward. Yes. Mm-hmm. And remember that empathy is understanding, not agreement. Empathy is understanding, not agreement. Yes. Because people forget that. They think, oh, if I have empathy, I agree with you. Not necessarily. You can understand where I'm coming from, understand my reasons, without actually agreeing with them. But that would have empathy. You'd understand why. And, pardon me, and they in turn will understand you. The 5W questions are who, what, where, when, and why. Who, what, where, when, and why. Do you ask them all exactly the same time in front of everybody? Probably not, depending on the circumstances, right? Who, what, where, when, and why will tell us, who told you that? What does that mean? Where did you hear it? When did you learn it? Why did you come to that conclusion? And other who, what, where, whens, and why. Mm-hmm. Then you will understand the core basis for whatever it is that you're dealing with. And you can go, oh, I didn't realize that. Well, we're going to go forward, right? Yeah, that's the idea of the thing, the 5W questions. They will indeed, the 5W questions, lead you to understanding. And if you understand something, then you can negotiate it. You can deal with it. You can maybe adopt it, depending on if you think it's a good idea, right? Yes. Sometimes you get the 5W question answers and you go, oh, I didn't think of that. Wow, that's a different angle, right? Yeah. It's quite possible to go, oh, my, I didn't know that. Ooh, mm-hmm. Didn't really have it covered there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Our next topic is that we need a plan, right? Yeah. We need a plan in order to be productive because we need a plan to go forward with. Because it's nice to be in agreement, right? It's nice to have empathy, which is understanding, not necessarily agreement, right? It's nice to have empathy. It's nice to ask the 5W questions. It's very interesting, all of this, right? Yes. But we don't want to just be theoretical about it. We're going to need a plan so that we can really do something about the ills of the world and right some wrongs, right? We need a plan. We need to know where we're going. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ooh, I like it. Lee says that having a plan to move forward is the pragmatic implementation of consensus. Ooh, I like it. Having a plan to move forward is the pragmatic implementation of consensus. Yeah, we agree. Now, what should we do about it? Yeah, what should our next steps be? I always like to end with that every time we have a meeting, a negotiation, whatever. At the very end, I like to ask, what should our next steps be? So that we're really moving forward in a pragmatic, real-world manner and not just thinking about it. I think I'd be terrible in a think tank. You know, there's think tanks that people and companies and like that have, where mostly retired executives and government people and like that go to talk about things and talk about how the world should be and about what needs to be done. But they don't implement anything. And they basically talk in enteric manner, just kind of theories being thrown out there. Mm-hmm. And waiting for it to stick. Thank you. That's an old expression. It's kind of an Americanism. There's an old expression. There's an old, I don't know if it's a joke or not, but it's kind of an expression. When somebody can't make up their mind and they don't know what they're doing and it's kind of like flipping a coin. They say, well, I threw a plate of spaghetti on the ceiling and I watched which one stuck. It means that you didn't know, so you just kind of did it randomly. It's a better expression in context. Let's just say that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But sometimes that's what happens. People are in agreement, they're in consensus, but they want to throw a plate of spaghetti. They don't know what they're doing to go forward on a pragmatic basis. Yes, as Lee says, that it's the pragmatic implementation of consensus is a plan to move forward. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. Jade and others are talking about the group being very, very diverse and that team leaders need to speak to the whole in the entire group so they don't go forward in pieces. Yeah, that happens sometimes. Isn't that weird? If you have smaller teams, sometimes called committees and subcommittees and like that, depending on what language is being used. But in any event, you have teams that are reporting to the whole, right? And they're kind of autonomous. Sometimes they make kind of unilateral decisions, and they go forward, which means that the group is going forward in pieces and not in one unified plan. Let's get all those pieces together. Let's discuss where they go, and let's go forward in a unified plan. Mm-hmm. Pardon me, took a sip of water. Because if you don't, you're going to have kind of no real plan, because it's all being pushed by different people with different agendas. No, let's understand that those are all subcommittees, subteams, and that there is a whole group of all of us, and that unified whole is what needs to go forward. Right? Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is a good point, too. Anthony and others are talking about bringing in an expert to help you go forward, to help create the plan, to help actually break any kind of deadlock that's occurred. Because sometimes you get kind of disagreement and you can't decide, or you've got lots of good plans and you can't decide which one to go forward with, right? Because they're all kind of different. In fact, sometimes they're really quite divergent and you don't know which one to choose, or if you can make some sort of a hybrid. This is indeed, as Jade and others are saying, time to pull in an expert. Somebody who has worked in this area before, someone who has had success, might even be a paid expert. There's nothing wrong with that. And you need this expert, this impartial third-party outsider, to tell you, to help you, to formulate a plan that really encompasses everybody's ideas and is really pragmatic to move forward. Yeah. So expert assistance is not a bad thing. And remember that an expert can be just somebody who's done it before. Doesn't have to be somebody with a degree in whatever it is that you need. Mm-hmm. Somebody who's got real knowledge and has been successful in the past, I think it's really more valuable than somebody who's just gotten out of school. Right? Right. Mm-hmm. Now let's move forward, because we have a plan, too. We want to get this program filled, right? Hmm? The next topic we were going to talk about is flexibility if the circumstances change, right? Because you can make all the plans you want, but sometimes something changes. And the something that changes might actually be your knowledge. You found something out along the way that's really important, that really makes a difference to the plan, right? And you go, oh my, now we're getting somewhere. Let's talk this through and let's find out what it is that we need to do. So flexibility in the plan itself, right? Because sometimes things do change. Hussein says a lot of times the group membership can change. And that it alters the group dynamic. It does. Isn't that funny? Even one person changing will alter the group dynamic. Depending how important the person who was left was and how enthusiastic the new person is, right? That depends on how hard the group dynamic changes. But the group dynamic will change no matter what, because you have to have a new member and they have to get gotten up to speed, right? And they come in inherently with new ideas. And maybe they bring up an old idea as a new idea, but now that idea is ready. It is something we need to consider, right? That happens too. We discussed that a long time ago. Maybe it's relevant now because things have changed. Our plan has changed. Our direction has changed. Stuff has changed, right? So you need to be able to be flexible, and you need to have change, take the change in stride. And as Hussein says, group membership can change and alters the group dynamic. It does. But we need to welcome the new person. If I've got someone who is leaving the group and we know it, a lot of times people, I mean, they don't just walk out. They give you notice and they tell you about it. Sometimes you have somebody in the group who is there for a set period of time. Yeah, I see this sometimes with, I see with all kinds of organizations, come to think of it. It's kind of popular in the United States to do that, at least in this area. A lot of times there is an effort made to make a group more diverse than it ordinarily would be. For example, to invite younger people in for their perspective, their generational perspective, right? To invite people from different ethnic groups to participate, different religions, right? Yeah, and a lot of times this is volunteer hours for them, and their company sends them in the sense that they put in for a leave of absence even, to work with this group and really get them off the ground and like that, because they're a very good group and they want to do some good in the world, and they're approved. But this person is getting their regular salary. It's just that their organization, their company, is program where you can get your regular salary and full-time help a good cause. And the program usually lasts, has a certain lasting date, like a year, right? And if that's true, and if somebody knows that they are leaving, I like to have them train the next person. Might even ask them to recommend the next person. But to train them, to let them shadow, to let them come to the meetings, so that when the person leaves the group, it's not such a shock to the dynamic. Because we already are acclimated to their replacement, right? I think it's a very valuable thing to do. I've done it for many years, and I do think, and I advise it, when people have that kind of like a board member or whoever it is. I advise it because it keeps everything running smoothly. And then the new person, who is really not so new to the group, is already up to speed and like that when they need to really jump in and become a participant. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I suppose that's true, too. People are saying it also gives you a chance to see if the new potential new person is a good fit. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes the organization might have some say in that and ask for somebody else to be assigned. They might not be a good fit. That's a real good point. I don't usually see that too much, but you never know. Yeah. You might really, really not be a good fit, organizational, personality, whatever kind of wise. And we might need to, well, think about that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely true. Mm-hmm. Yeah, good point. Marsalis and other people are talking about outside change. Like a fundraising, a funding, somebody promised funding and they didn't. Or somebody granted funding and now we can do more, right? Yeah, it goes both ways. Mm-hmm. Yeah, some sort of outside changes. New group is formed either in agreement, which maybe we should go out and contact them and see if we can pool resources. Disagreement with our viewpoint, right? Sometimes it comes to people's attention. And they go, no, I don't think that's a good idea. They form their own group. Mm-hmm. Good point, too. Hannah says that sometimes the problem gets solved. Mm-hmm. And if you have a strong group dynamic, you might want to take on something else. Yeah, that happens. Sometimes the whatever the problem was, hot diggity, it's been solved. We're in good shape. We can stop fighting. Yeah. Let's look to something else, right? Yeah. Groups have that. They're really good, and they're really good with fundraising, and they've gotten really big and like that. There was a thing around here called the March of Dimes. I think, I don't know if I remember from childhood or not, but they did something that got solved by a vaccine. I think it was tuberculosis, but I wouldn't swear to it. But they were a really good group, and they were really had in place a lot of people to do good things, and they switched focus because, lo and behold, what they were working for happened. A cure was found, right? Hot diggity. That's fabulous, right? Yes. And, yeah, now they do premature birth defects type funding and research and like that because they were really good at it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they agreed on a new problem. They agreed on a new effort that needed to be made. There's always something happening in the world that could use some help, don't you think? Yes. Mm-hmm. The next topic we were going to talk about is the role that media plays in all of this and productivity and being productive. Mm-hmm. This is a good point that Carolyn is making. She says that sometimes you have to deal with the media because it may be make or break if you need a voter approval or the approval of the public, really. Public sentiment changes over time. In your opinion, either good or bad, depending on which side you're on. And sometimes something that would have not been popular, would not have been possible to do, is now possible because societal ideas have changed, and that to a great extent is media driven, right? Either traditional media, television, movies, like that, and now the non-traditional media, which is relatively newish on the scene. Mm-hmm. But yeah, a public opinion is very much media driven. Surprisingly enough, it's somewhat celebrity driven too, which seems weird to me, but because I guess because I'm not a real fan of anybody. But organizations actually get what I'm going to call A-list actors and actresses to support them, at least publicly. I tend to suspect that all of those things are paid commercials, but that's just me. Maybe they're not, but I think so. But in any event, that's use of the media to get public approval, public input, right? Right. Yeah, and it's very fascinating. Very fascinating to see how sometimes things shift. Yeah. Well, really, that's true. The marijuana example is one of those, right? It was the right time. People feel more open to what I'm going to call a natural remedy. Marijuana is basically an herb, right? And a lot of the United States residents had at one time or another tried it. They were familiar with it because although it was dreadfully illegal, that didn't mean that it was not fairly easily obtained, right? There's a difference. And the media backed in quite a few states that got the vote to vote affirmative. The media ran stories about people being helped. People who really needed something that regular medicine was either not able to accommodate or had so many horrible side effects that you really, really didn't want to take regular medicine, right? Yeah. And they were very sympathetic, right? And it made the public feel more sympathetic when they went to the voting stations. Mm-hmm. Well, all right, in my state, we vote by mail. But when they voted, right, it made everybody feel kind of like, yeah, I understand that issue, and if I ever got sick, Well, gee, I'd like to be able to have some natural pain relief. And like that, I know what pain is. I mean, I've slammed my hand in a drawer. Yeah, I mean, you didn't have to actually have one of the diseases that it was particularly good for to have empathy, that's understanding, of how awful that is. And gee, if there's just something that could help it, well, why not? Why shouldn't you have it, right? So that's the use of the media. Remember that when you use the media, you need to have not everybody in the room or all over the world doing their own media and texting and blogging and stuff while it's in process. No. We're going to appoint a spokesperson. We are. And that spokesperson, we will decide their speaking points, what we'd like them to say, basically. And they will deal with the media. I do not like people to editorialize, to report on what's going on, when it's going on, to the outside world. It always is a bad idea. First of all, it's subject to misinterpretation. Second of all, it's subject to people taking little snatches without context out and changing the meaning, right? And like that, yeah. It's all very, very contextual, and it is very much in need of control, right? By the group, by the leader, yeah. Devin and others are saying no reporting during the process and control that which will control the media output. Very important. Very important to have a spokesperson to say no. We will not all be blogging on this because it's going to get misinterpreted. Yeah. You ever see that or misquoted? Yes. You know, people. I once saw this not in a business context, but with the teenage daughter of a friend of mine. And she blogged, texted, Facebooked, whatever. I can't remember what she used, but one of the media giants. And she wrote, "I hate myself for eating cheesecake last night." Now, that's very specific. It means that I wish that I hadn't had those calories, but it was so delicious that I couldn't help it. And "I hate myself" was taken out of context and reported to the school medical suicide prevention hotline thing. But they left out the "for eating that cheesecake." Yeah, it was just somebody being mean. So they were supposed to report somebody, so they did it. But it was taken completely out of context, right? So whatever you say, you need to be very careful. And please don't say it about our process and while we're in the middle of it, because it's like making sausage. No one wants to see it. It's ugly. Let's go to process efficiency. Uh-oh, we may run out of time for the recipes again. Let's see if we can make one. Process efficiency, right? Magda and others are talking about having transparency. Very much so. Yes. And we need to be open to questions and suggestions. Yeah. Transparency means that I tell you stuff because we have a tendency as leaders, after we've done it around a long time, we have a lot of experience. Excuse me, I'm going to take a sip of water. Thank you. Excuse me. That we have a tendency to think that, of course, that's obvious. People know that. And the answer is no, it's not. And people don't. Yeah. Because they don't realize stuff that we think is obvious because we've seen it so many times. Not obvious at all. You have to tell them. Yeah. I also like to do housekeeping things. I am quite fond of the reacquainting aspect where we all go around and say what new nuts, what's happened to us since we last met, right? What we've done, not just what we've worked on for the project, because we're all going to know that, because that's really the basis of our conversation. But how are we doing as people? How's things? And sometimes somebody in the group can help somebody if they're having some difficulties, right? Make a suggestion. Make a phone call. We've had that quite a bit. Yeah, sometimes people have, some sort of a family member who's ill or something, and something can be, somebody knows something to do about it. Fabulous. Suki says you need to keep everybody in the loop, which is indeed process efficiency. It means that you have somebody who is really keeping track of this particular group and their needs and what kind of information needs to be disseminated and keeping track of whether or not we're meeting and keeping track of where and what kind of facilities and food and like that. Yeah. If it is possible, and sometimes it is not, if it is possible, I recommend having a paid administrative assistant. You might not need more than one, but they need to be very efficient, right? Now, you can do it with volunteers and interns and like that, and I must confess the recipe for peace now, no one takes a salary while volunteers, including me. I don't take a salary. However, I do have a very professional assistant who also keeps track of the Recipe for Peace Now seminars and workshops and stuff. Yeah. And is she paid out of the organization? Well, now actually she is, because we get some money and we there's a lot of book sales and workshops and seminars. When it first started, though, she was my administrative assistant. I just paid her, and she worked on this too, right? Yeah. Now we have an actual dedicated person, which is fabulous. But what I'm telling you is volunteers and interns have sketchy skills, maybe, right, in actually doing process. They've got other lives. That it's not their full time. And especially interns, volunteers too, I explained to you about corporations, they have time limits. All of a sudden they're gone. And they need to train the new person, or you will spend an awful lot of time getting someone up to speed, right? And a lot of effort and a lot of kind of inefficiency. And yes, productivity will suffer if you don't have process efficiency. Our last area that we're going to talk about was the civility rules. Maybe they should have been first. But they, of course, permeate everything we do. And the civility rules are the only rules, the recipe, for those of you who are new, only rules the Recipe for Peace Now actually has. And at their core, the civility rules say we will not be rude to one another. We will not be rude to one another. We will take turns. We will be gracious. We will listen and consider. We will have empathy, which is understanding, not necessarily agreement. And we will plain ordinary not be rude, right? Yeah. The main thing about the civility rules, yes, they create a convivial atmosphere, as Mitrenko says, yes. And that they need to be, it keeps people enthusiastic because it creates a convivial atmosphere, right? Right? And people like it's better if you come to a meeting and everybody is civil and convivial, and we're about to talk about food because we have like 3 minutes, and it makes for a better meeting and more enthusiasm, right? Right. The civility rules need to be announced. That's part of transparency. Then they need to be enforced immediately, consistently, and impartially. Immediately, consistently, and impartially. Because if you try to enforce civility rules after things have become uncivil, it's too late. You've let it get too far. You need to stop immediately and make sure that we don't have uncivil negotiations, right? And one of the ways to help that with this, with, to help stop and like that, is to call a timeout so that you can have maybe a little discussion with whoever it is that's being uncivil, right, in private first and then in front of peers. You might have a little discussion with them. They may not realize it. Sometimes people don't. Sometimes people come from a kind of bombastic culture, and they don't realize that they're being considered to be uncivil. It's just their way, and they have to be reminded, right? But a timeout to have maybe a little food when things are getting a little hot so everybody can cool down and do something they like, which is to eat. Yeah. So you see, the food is a tool. I mean, we could be hungry also. But it's a way to get us to not disagree over something. We can all agree that something is absolutely delicious, right? Yeah. And it is very, very affirming to be able to get together and to have a little bite to eat. If you're going to do that, and you are, you need to take a survey. Whether anybody has a food allergy, some sort of food they can't eat or won't eat, or religious prohibition, right? Mm-hmm. You disseminate that information, and then you ask everybody to, when they come, to bring a list, not what it's called, but what is in it, so I can run my eye down the list and see if there's something in there that I can't eat. Yes. Mm-hmm. Now, we should also have a safe recipe. Usually I bring at least one that is something that everybody can eat according to our survey. And I like it to be something that people are familiar with so that they know if they can eat it or not. Yeah, in my area, a curry would be kind of unusual. But in your area, it might not be. It might be the most common thing in the whole wide world. So it depends on what your people are used to eating. Now, this time, haven't done both recipes in a little while. Oops, we're going to run a little over it. That's okay. Let's do the safe recipe, which is the chicken nuggets with the honey mustard dip. Very delicious and very much nicer than what you get in a package because that stuff's kind of not food. It's got a funny soft consistency. So, Let's start doing this. We're going to have, let's get our stuff together. We're going to have about a half cup of mayonnaise. Make it the real kind. This is for the dip, right? The mayonnaise, half cup, not some sort of light stuff, the real kind. 2 tablespoons of Dijon mustard, something with a little spice to it, not too much. Let's have 2 tablespoons of honey also, because I like it a little sweet. 2 pounds of skinless, boneless chicken breasts, which we're going to cube. Around here, you can get that very easily and already done up. If wherever you are, a whole chicken is your option, just skin it and cut it into cubes. The dark meat's fine, too. About 1/4 cup of all-purpose flour, because we're going to dredge. Mm-hmm. Let's have a little bit, it's called poultry seasoning out here. It's kind of seasoned salt. Is what it is, some sort of like a seasoned salt. Let's have just a little bit to go in, mix in, like a half teaspoon. You guys know that I think you should cook rather bland and have condiments to the side so that everybody can choose what it is that they like and how spicy they'd like it. I mean, you could put jalapenos to the side of this, but not in it. Mm-hmm. Let's have a beaten egg, 2 tablespoons of milk, and 1.5 cups of breadcrumbs. Now, in my neck of the woods, breadcrumbs come in a canister. You don't have to make them. And they come either plain or flavored. For this, I would use flavored. You like it more cheesy, they have Parmesan flavor. It's got actual Parmesan cheese in it. I kind of prefer the Italian seasoning. It's quite delicious. Yeah. But pick some sort of a flavored breadcrumb that you like, as long as you have the option. If not, make your own breadcrumbs and put in a little bit of flavor, a little bit of like a seasoned salt or a little bit of Italian seasoning or some cheese or whatever you like. Let's preheat our oven to 4 1/4. Let's make our dip first. That's going to be the mayonnaise, the mustard, and the honey. Stir, stir, stir. Nice little bowl. Cover it. Put it in the fridge. so that it's nice and cold and kind of all together for serving, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, we've got our chicken we've made into the cubes. Let's stick the flour, the little bit of seasoning, and in a plastic bag, right? Let's take our chicken, throw it in. Well, pieces, not whole thing at once, because you don't have big enough plastic bag. Shook them around in the plastic bag with the flour, right? Because we're flouring them, right? Dump them out. Coat the next ones. Dump them out. In a bowl, we're going to stir together. We're going to dip this, right? So a big enough bowl. Stir together the one egg and the milk. Then take your breadcrumbs. I like to people put them in a bowl, but I think it gets clumpy. I like to spread the breadcrumbs out on like a piece of wax paper or something so that you don't make a mess and you can just pick them up. But I like to spread them out because what course we're going to do is we're going to take our floured chicken pieces. We're going to stick them in the egg milk mixture, and then we're going to stick them in the breadcrumbs, right, so they stick. Then we're going to put them on a big baking sheet and bake them for about 15 minutes. So you want the chicken to not be pink inside, right? So what you've done is you haven't fried them, which is kind of healthy, and I must confess that I don't actually have a big fryer where you dip things, you know, in baskets and stuff. And besides, if you bake them, then they all come out at the same time, and you don't have some beastly hot and some getting cold while the grease is dripping off of them. I like to bake them. It's much better than frying them. There you have it, folks. Delicious. Make lots of dipping sauce because we're going to put a spoon in it and not let people double dip. You need more than this? Go for it. Just double the recipe or whatever. And easy to do. It's actually fun because you get to dip things and then bake them and they're all nice and crunchy and yummy. No, I don't turn mine. And no, I don't grease the pan. People ask me if I grease the baking sheet. I must confess that since I'm not big on cleanup, I do put a piece of tin foil on the baking sheet so that it doesn't stick and I can just it's like when I said to use wax paper or saran wrap or something for the crumbs, so that if you just put them on a board, you have to wash the board really well because you've used raw chicken and things, and besides, it's clumpy. If you use a disposable piece of underneath, you just pick them up and ditch them, whatever's left over, right? Right. Yeah, no, you just bake them right on the ungreased baking sheet. They come out fabulous. The trick is that you need to bake them long enough to be crispy and cooked straight through. I say at least 15 minutes because I don't like to see the chicken pink. Depends how big the chunks are, of course. And, yeah, it's real popular. And that is our safe recipe. My friends, we are out of time. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for all of your participation. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. If you would like to find us, we're recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Prior shows, they're archived on that website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. Thank you for all of your participation. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.